Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies, TV, pop culture, way too much. I'm your host, Sean Chandler, and joining me today is Griffin Schiller. Griffin, how you doing?
Hey, I'm going. I don't know what I am. I'm incapable of speaking. That's apparently what it is. No, I'm doing pretty great, man. I had a fun time watching the Super Bowl last night. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Griffin. I run the Film Speak channel, and I'm a entertainment journalist in this space. And so I'm very privileged and honored to be joining Sean on his podcast. And it's great to just finally get this thing out there. We've been recording so many test episodes, and it's just like, get it out, man. Let's see. Yeah. Let the world witness what this whole thing is going to be.
And with that in mind, if you don't know, once this is live on all the podcast directories, there's going to be like three more episodes over there. I actually was hoping they'd be on all the podcast directories, but since I don't really know what I'm doing, I didn't start signing up for them soon enough. So looks like we're on YouTube right now, and then you can find them on everywhere you'll be looking. I think it's on Spotify right now. I think that one just accepts you immediately. The other ones, where they take a little bit longer to get going. But anyway, today what we'll be talking about, a little talk about the Super Bowl and all the trailers that we got for that. I'm talking about the F9 trailer and the big massive concert that they gave us beforehand. And then a whole bunch of DC talk, not the Christian pop band that I spent way too much time listening to growing up, but as in DC movies, because we got a new one this week and there's plenty to talk about when it comes to the world of DC movies. But so if you're listening over on any of your podcast sites, be sure to follow me, like, and then give me a little review over there to kind of help launch the trailer. I'm getting ahead of myself. Launch the podcast as we're starting something new, and hopefully we can get some nice momentum with all this. But our first topic of the day is the Super Bowl. So you said you watched it. I watched it with my kids. I was actually really proud of them. They watched the whole thing. I mean,
Did they really? They were drawing.
They weren't fully engaged with the game.
Yeah.
But they weren't running outside. They weren't getting their toys. And every time, because we were playing like commercial bingo, got the bingo cards with all the commercial ads and everything. So they were fully engaged with that, which was pretty cool. Yeah. And the game, I don't know, it seemed pretty dull for the first three quarters. And then suddenly got really exciting in the very last little section there where we had quite the comeback.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, it was, I actually thought it was a pretty good game. It was, I mean, there wasn't a lot of scoring, so, like, obviously, it was more of, like, a game of, like, whatever the hell the name of that saying is. It was attrition. That's what it was. It was a game of attrition, you know. I mean, I was going for the Chiefs, so I was, like, pretty happy to see them come out on top. I really like Patrick Mahomes and
I'm
Andy Reid.
I'm from California. And the Bay Area, San Jose, so just not too far from San Francisco. So naturally, I was rooting for Joe Montana. I guess he didn't play much. So I guess that was Steve Young was, I guess, the quarterback. I'm very up to date on my football. But Patrick was actually one of my quarterbacks on my fantasy football teams. I didn't know what team he was on, but he was my quarterback. So it was fun to actually get to watch him, see what he actually looks like, and he won a Super Bowl. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And well, in the dude's my age. Dude's 24. Like, that's just like, it's like, what the heck am I doing with my life, man? This guy's winning a Super Bowl. He's making headlines. Like, right. Oh, God.
Well,
millions of dollars,
While I was at the gym, they were, you know, obviously commenting on all of that on the TV screens, and they showed a tweet of him from 2013 saying something like, wouldn't it be so cool to win the Super Bowl and get to say, I'm going to Disney World, and then 24 years old, he won the Super Bowl. That is just insane. And that's like so much career ahead of him. Very cool. So anyway, we got a bunch of different little spots for movies. For the most part, not very interesting to me. Most of what we got, because it was just little, they weren't bad. Their purpose was to position these movies that me and you, we know tons about them already, but position them for the masses. So what, you know, Invisible Man, Maverick, Bond, Mulan, a bunch of those ones. The one that stuck out to me the most was we got our first look at the Disney Plus Marvel TV shows. So we've seen pictures. Yeah. We actually got footage from them. So for me, mind blown. Awesome that we got to see that. A lot of the other stuff for me, it was just kind of like, okay, that happened. What did you think about the ones we got?
I think that the top, first of all, we'll just kind of start chronologically. I thought the Top Gun Maverick spot, even though, like, for all of these, they're only like 30, 40 seconds, but like sometimes they can cram like a decent amount into that amount of time.
Or just the right detail.
Exactly.
Just with Maverick, it's like one line of dialogue and you go, oh, that's where this is going. Kind of changes everything when you're kind of like, there's a different relationship between these two characters.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing that struck me about the Maverick trailer was just like them showcasing like the G-force, you know, the in the cockpit shots. I mean, like we had seen some of that already in the trailers, but this one was just kind of like, you know, showcasing it a little bit more, showing just like all the crazy stuff and how just like gorgeous this film is going to look. I am like, I'm all on board for that film. But the one that did it for me, come on, guys, we're talking No Time to Die. The second that spot started, I didn't even know it was a James Bond spot.
Right.
I was like, I was taken back.
Same.
It took me until I saw Daniel Craig in the cockpit with the goggles. I was like, what is happening here? He comes out of this like, I don't even know, like a jet or something in like this like collapsible plane, and then like the trailer's really like playing into the legacy of like his tenure. It's like it's the 25th film in the franchise. We get some awesome shots, some great lines of dialogue from Safin, some just like gorgeous cinematography. Like I love the shot that has well, first of all, the guy's like climbing down on the side of the building, but then also the one of M, Judy Dench's M, like the portrait of her with like the straight on shot there. Oh, there's so I actually think that out of all the spots released, this was my favorite one. And once again, it doesn't really give anything away, but it kind of contextualized stuff a little bit more. Like we see Safin with the gun, and if you look at that and you compare it to stuff from the Bond trailer, you can kind of piece together how these events are going in, you know, also based off of what Bond is wearing. And there were a few shots in there where I was like, is Daniel Craig crying? Like, like what kind of just like event just went on to make him have this sort of reaction? So for me, it was just really exciting. And I think there's a lot you can kind of dig into with that trailer specifically.
Yeah, I don't know. I think when they can give you just a little bit that tease that gets you excited, that it's designed to let the masses see it, but for the deeper people that track all of this on the internet, just the right shots that give you something that we didn't get before. That's just a couple of these little shots without needing to over-explain the story, over-explain the plot, can land just right.
Yeah.
We also got the first look we've seen of the Minions 2, which I, least favorite of the Despicable Me movies. And we're getting a second one because it, like, I don't know if it crossed the $1 billion mark, but it was right at the $1 billion mark. Minions.
It was highly profitable. Yeah.
Yes.
It wasn't here's the thing, is like, it wasn't even a Super Bowl spot. It was like a teaser
for the trailer that drops Wednesday.
Debut on Wednesday. Yeah.
Yay. Can't wait. I'm so excited for that one.
Yeah.
You know, there's some nice teases. Maybe it's because my mind was much more in family mode. Hey, my kids are actually watching this stuff that maybe some of them didn't pop to me. And also, like, the Maverick one played right before the game, and my kids were still outside, and I was still trying to figure out technology. So I watched that one on the internet afterwards, so I didn't get the full, like, oh, look what I just saw. So maybe that knocked it back a little bit for me, my excitement on some of them. But
What did you think of the Black Widow one?
I saw on Twitter someone pointed out like an editing move where there's like this scream from David Harbour, and they have the shot of like, it's clearly not the noise that he makes, but in the trailer his mouth is open, so it plays like he's making this ridiculous scream. So that's my big takeaway from it. Yeah, I like that we still don't know too much about it, but we're seeing just kind of this spy action movie inside of the MCU. I'm kind of actively trying to not overwatch some of these ones. If I'm not going to do a video on it, I'm trying to watch it the one time and just like have that gut reaction to it rather than the play-by-play of everything.
Sure. Yeah.
So I didn't rewatch it a bunch of times very intentionally to not oversaturate myself with this one. I overdid it on everything Endgame, and I don't feel I need to do that as much this go round. But I just enjoyed the spy vibe to it.
Same. Yeah, no, same. And then, yeah, the you mentioned it already, but the Disney Plus Marvel shows, it was just like cool getting a first look at that. I mean, WandaVision looks wacky, man.
Yeah,
that
wacky looks, is the right word.
It just looks like really cool. And like Scott Derrickson is even hyping that thing up, and he's no longer attached with like Marvel anymore. And so it's like Paul Bettany saying like the movie's like effing bonkers, like it's, or not the movie, the show. And so like everything they're saying and like the footage that we've gotten is pretty in line with like just, this is going to be unlike anything you've ever seen before. And I'm really just, I appreciate, you know, Kevin Feige and Marvel taking a big swing with this one.
For me, the language I've been using, I actually have a video that's posting in about 23 minutes from when we're filming this. But what I said in that video was, I'm more intrigued. I'm curious. I'm not fully excited because I just don't know what it is. It is so weird and wacky that I'm like, this isn't what I signed up for when it comes to the MCU. So I kind of really like that. Kind of don't know what to make of that. It's in that category, which is fun. It's fun, but I can't fully say I'm fully excited the way I'm like Falcon Winter Soldier. I know what that's going to be, and I'm excited to see a spy TV show. I wanted them to do with Black Widow. I felt her character made sense to do that with, like do this deep, rich backstory series, but she's Scarlet, so she probably wanted a movie. Makes sense. Yeah. So do the spy show with them. I'm totally on board for that. But so those are some of our quick impressions on that one. The other big trailer, the big trailer we got on Friday with a whole event tied to it, F9. And they announced when they were doing like this. They said they were doing a concert. And then the trailer debut was like, what does that mean? And so I sit down when the time was for that to debut. And they had an hour and 15 minute long concert with everyone and their friends coming out, doing interviews, doing songs. And then we get a 4 minute long trailer. So I like big, dumb spectacle. I call them Taco Bell movies, fast food entertainment. So this movie looks incredibly dumb. All the melodrama. That's kind of what I want from my Fast and Furious movies. Where are you on F9?
First of all, I just can't get over the fact that the name of this movie is F9, the Fast Saga. That's just absurd. But I think it really speaks volumes about this franchise when the most just absurd thing in this trailer is that John Cena and Vin Diesel are blood relatives. Like that is, I just audibly groaned when like Michelle Rodriguez is like, what's his name? Jacob is Dom's brother. And I was just like, stop it right now. Like, you can believe me. I will believe cars going into space, magnetized cars, like cars grappling off of
the
like
Tarzan
cliffs.
Swing.
The Tarzan. Yeah, right. I'll believe all of that. But John Cena and Vin Diesel are not blood relatives. You have gone too far here, Fast and Furious franchise. That is a straw that broke the camel's back. No,
In the pre-show, they had John Cena there, who had a very weird hairstyle. It's like, what? John Cena, I think you can afford a better stylist or style than this. But they're interviewing him. It's like, who's your character? And he goes, I can't tell you. But I can talk about it in about 5 minutes after we show this. And then you watch it and you go, oh, that's why you couldn't talk about it.
It's so dumb. It's just like, you're telling me we're 9 movies in and like over 20 years later, and we just now know that Dominic Toretto, Mr. Family, has a biological brother. Like, that to me is just like unbelievable. But
who
like,
has the exact same street racing spy skills? Like, he's also a street racing spy.
Yeah, it's just, oh man, it just made me roll my eyes. So I laughed. Like, I kept rewinding that part and just kept laughing at that. But like, that aside, it's just big dumb action spectacle. It's just like a bunch of kids playing with Hot Wheels at this point. Like, I don't even know like what to say. It's just, it's so ridiculous.
Why I love them.
Yeah, it's like a Pontiac with like a jet propulsion strapped to it. Like, you can't make this. Like, you can't make this stuff up. It's just, it's so silly. But like, I'm just glad that we live in a world where this franchise exists and that it's so self-aware as to what it is.
But the interviews with the actors, you wouldn't get that impression because they're like, no, you know, this series is all about family and like we really care about the family and we've become a family and Tyrese is my family and like Vin Diesel says the word family more than Dom does, and Dom only says the word family. And so they're going all in on this, and you're like watching the trailer, and the first minute, it felt subdued. Like, it's like, oh, family. It's okay, we're dealing in with family. It's his brother. Okay, family. Where's the crazy? Oh, here's the crazy.
And, here it is.
But they don't talk about it in that regard. They're not like, oh, yeah, I mean, we just actively think, what's the craziest thing we can... They don't even say that. They just say, we really care about family. And that's what we're all about.
It's ridiculous. Like, the entire... I will say this, like, listen, I enjoy these movies. I think they're good at what they do. I'm way more interested in seeing what Hobbs and Shaw kind of does more than I am the Fast and Furious franchise because that interests me more. But like,
and this this feels a little bit played out. Like, Hobbs and Shaw feels like we have more room, and it's set up to be a ridiculous spy stuff. It makes more sense. Like, that's what that franchise is, where this one, it's like, they just keep going crazier. And so this one, it's like, okay, I mean, it looks dumb, I'll be there. But Hobbs and Shaw still feels fresh.
Yeah, no, for sure. But the thing about this is, like, they're throwing this big concert. They've got, like, Wiz Khalifa out there. And, like, I mean, they do, like, the camera back outs, and they try and make it look like it's crammed full of people. No one is there. It's like,
they backed up, and you're like, there's, like, 150 people there.
Yeah, right. Like, I feel like they grossly overestimate their place in pop culture. Like you guys are you're not Star Wars, you're not Marvel, you're not even Mission Impossible. Like, you're Fast and Furious. People go to see you every like couple of years because you're just you're that stupid, and it's that kind of spectacle that like people want to go and just laugh and be entertained. Not like, you know,
the movies make the $1 billion club, but that's international. It's 75% international.
It's all China, man. Yeah, exactly. Because these movies really play well to an audience. Like, people have fun in them, but like, I guarantee you, you know, after its theatrical run, you go and you ask people, it's like, oh, when was the last time you watched the last Fast and Furious movie? Probably when it was last in theaters. Because I know for myself, like, I never go back and revisit these movies. Like, they're just... Yeah. Like, it's just like a one and done, man, you know? Yeah.
And to your point, that theater experience is really good.
Oh, it's fun.
Fast Five is one of the most fun movies I ever saw in the theater. I mean, people had muscle cars out in the parking lot, the whole deal. And, but yeah, I mean, they're movies that when you're sitting at home, like, hey, I'll just put something on by myself, it doesn't play the same way as a packed room full of people pumped to see what they're going to do this time.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but yeah, you know, they're dumb, and it's given me my kind of dumb. Even now, the dumb is getting into the melodrama side where John Cena and John Cena is playing Dominic Toretto's brother. All right, now we're going to move on to our big subject of the day. We're moving on to a whole lot of DC talk, talking about, we got a new movie coming out. And I just kind of want to dive into a couple of different questions in regards to the DCEU and Warner Brothers, all their DC stuff in general. First question, at what point in time would you say that they're running equal to Marvel? Have they caught up? And then the other one of what went wrong that got them so far off? And then we'll dive into a couple of other things at the same time after that. But first so the last little run they've had since Justice League, they're doing good.
And doing great.
I mean, you've got Oscar buzz. Like they're like in, like, we're about to find out. Maybe they're about to win Oscars. All the early Twitter chatter, Birds of Prey, and you've seen it. Positive.
Yep.
Shazam, over 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. Interesting, different, fun. Aquaman, $1 billion club. So they're on a nice little run. So I've seen some other people, John Campy answered this question over on his channel, but that's what people kind of discuss. What point in time do they catch up? What point in time have they passed Marvel and everything that they're doing? And I think that it's a little bit tricky. I think what the strategy specifically that DC's doing are standalone movies. So if you talk about award season, they've already won. They've already won. But if you're talking about a cohesive tight franchise, I think Marvel has, it's, they're so far ahead doing laps around DC, they've got to drop the ball for DC to pass them. That would be my perspective on it.
Well, here's the thing. While both studios may have started out trying to do the same thing, they're on completely different trajectories right now. They're doing two completely different things. I don't even think you can really compare them anymore. Marvel's big MO has always been the interconnected universe. Yep. We want to make stories that are interconnected. Like, yes, we will make films that are, you know, within certain subgenres, but they're still going to have that MCU flavor. They're all going to feel like one cohesive vision. DC, I'm almost glad they learned their lesson from Justice League, because it forced them to be different. Now we're getting movies like Aquaman, which is like balls to the walls, insane, swashbuckling action camp. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fun. Then you got movies like Wonder Woman, even before Justice League, that is like strong female protagonist, you know, very emotional, dramatic. It's a period piece. And it's very much its own thing. And with Wonder Woman 1984, it looks like they're doubling down on that, on making it its own distinct thing. Then you get a film like Shazam, which, you know, I don't really like I don't ever think about Shazam, but like it's the perfect movie for like families and like younger kids. It's got that like
Demons eating heads.
Right, but even that I'd say is like equivalent to like some of the stuff in the older Harry Potter movies, or like even like, you know, films of the 80s like Goonies or like whatever, Gremlins or whatever, like even like some of Spielberg stuff in like Raiders or whatnot. So like, it's comparable to that level. It's still family entertainment, and it's fun. We get Joker. It's their prestige picture. It's not even connected to the DCEU, but it's like, they're doing stuff like this. And then you get Birds of Prey, which is what I would consider to be their crack at Deadpool, per se, while being far better than either of those two films. It's like a crime comedy.
So you say, I haven't seen Birds of Prey. I see it Wednesday.
Yeah.
You would say it's way better than both Deadpool movies.
Maybe not way better, but...
Better?
I will not say way better. I will say that I prefer it, because it's
our
not,
buddy Zach Pope gonna beat you up when we're hanging out together.
He will probably beat me up. No, listen, people will probably not agree with me. I just found what Birds of Prey doing to be fresh, and it doesn't beat you over the head with the fact that it's an edgy, R-rated, like, fourth wall-breaking crime comedy. Like, I said in my tweet, it has, like, a dash of Tarantino in there, in the way it kind of approaches, like, these multiple storylines, like Pulp Fiction-esque stuff. But, like, it's...
Interesting.
It's different, and that's what I want to see. I want to see these comic book studios make movies that have their own identity, that have their own flavor. Yeah, we can interconnect them a little bit, but like, that's not the main focus. The main focus is making a good movie that services the characters, and I think DC has really turned around on that.
So you would say there's no comparison. There's no catching up because they're doing two different things.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, that's exactly what I would say. Yeah.
And I think that's a better way to think about it. Are they doing something that equally has merit? And right now, the stride they're on, yes. You're just talking about in general, which one of these franchises is better, overall quality of everything they've done. I mean, the MCU is just so prolific and so quality consistently. Almost nobody can catch up with that. Like 23 films, all of them fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, bukus of money, and fans love them. You can't catch up with that, but what you can do is your own thing.
Right, exactly. And I would actually pose this question to you. Do we look at the legacy of DC, or do we just look at the DCEU? Because if we look at the legacy of DC, I would almost say that DC has and continues to outpace Marvel in terms of their highs are definitely higher than Marvel's highs, but their lows are definitely lower. So it's like, it might be wildly uneven, but when they hit their stride, I would say that DC is the best in this sort of medium. But they have a history of being inconsistent. It's just right now they happen to be consistent.
Yeah, that's what makes it so tricky. WB seems to be like, hey, I'm going to give you enough rope to hang yourself or to make the Dark Knight or the Joker. And they seem to consistently have done that. And I mean, if you go all the way back to the Superman franchise, and we'll talk about them actually in just a little bit. I mean, they get Mario Puzo to make the first draft of the story of the first two movies. And then they also make one starring Richard Pryor and one with Nuclear Man with Ducky or whatever his name was in the fourth one. Lenny Luthor. I mean, they give them the freedom to do something that's memorable, might not be good, might be awful, or you could get some of the best that we've ever seen. Actually, whenever I did my top 10 comic book movies of all time, you know, it was like, I think it was half and half, Marvel and DC, but the top five was DC one. Five, three, and one were DC movies. And someone still called me a DC hater in the comments. Like, just because the DCEU isn't in here doesn't mean I'm a DC hater.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That is super far from the truth. Just that first batch of DCEU movies had some inconsistency in there. But yeah, their legacy is pretty great.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll say this for the DCEU, you know, in the Snyderverse and stuff like that, even though those films might not have landed for everyone, you know, for me, I think Man of Steel is a masterpiece. I think it's the best Superman film ever made. I think it's one of the best comic book films ever made. And I think BVS Ultimate is actually a pretty great epic.
I got to rewind real quick. On Batman of Steel, in your best of the decade, where would Man of Steel be comparable in that list?
Of
movies in general?
Yeah, it would probably be somewhere in the middle, maybe like upper middle. I can't remember. I'd have to go back and look where I placed it, but
because I saw a thing where you had your favorite scores and I misread it. And you had like Man of Steel is your favorite movie of the decade. I was like, whoa, he's got that way up there. It's like, oh, favorite scores.
No,
different.
Favorite scores.
I wasn't quite sure where you landed on Man of Steel, the movie.
Yeah, so. No, well, I mean, the score is just...
It's incredible.
It's perfect. It's incredible. No. But like, here's the, like, for as much crap as like the early DCEU films get, you got to credit them with having a distinct directorial vision, which I don't think all of the MCU films necessarily have. Like a movie like Captain Marvel or a movie like Thor, The Dark World, or like, you know, I'd even say Doctor Strange. They don't really like have like, it doesn't feel like the people who made them made them. It feels more like the product of like Kevin Feige, which is, that's fine. That's franchise filmmaking. Like you do whatever you want. Like it's take, you know, pick what you like and what you don't like. But like, I am more inclined to be more forgiving and to appreciate it when the director is given full creative vision and you can clearly see that it's their project.
So let's kind of transition that point right there to what do we think went wrong with that 2016-2017 era of movies there? Because it seemed obviously a lot of people didn't particularly like Batman v Superman. I gave it a positive review, and I would stand by that. Original
even
cut,
the theatrical.
And, yeah, I mean, I would. When, okay. I mean, it was this. It wasn't this. I mean, it was this.
Right.
But I mean, I thought that there was a lot of things there that I enjoyed that were interesting, and then it was fleshed out with the director's cut. But I can see where the critics are. Like, I see why people would be like, "What on earth is this?" But I've always had a positive experience with it. But then Suicide Squad, that's one that I saw and I was like, okay, that was kind of fun. And then rewatched and I was like, what did I just watch? And then, you know, Justice League was bizarre to say the least. What went wrong? What's your take?
Yeah, the biggest issue for me is with the DCEU in the early stages was just studio interference in trying to replicate the Marvel formula. That was their biggest Achilles heel. Because listen, like Man of Steel got pretty middling reviews when it initially came out, but if you look at Zack Snyder's like track record, Zack Snyder's a divisive filmmaker. Like people either really like the hyper stylized mythic storytelling or they don't. They find it pretentious. That's just what you're going to get with a filmmaker like Zack Snyder. And when you put all of your chips on that guy, you're going to get a movie that has mixed reception. But I think time has been very kind to Man of Steel, given other projects that have come out and just like, you know, people sitting on it a little bit more. And I would actually say that for a majority of Snyder's films. I for the time being, I will say that Man of Steel is like it was a success. You go to BVS, the reason,
but it also didn't set up a universe. It's a movie that wasn't designed to set up a universe. There's little Easter eggs of Wayne throughout the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But like their premise, if you listen to Christopher Nolan, like his take on what made it interesting to him when Goyer pitched it, do you don't know the story? In the middle of writing The Dark Knight Rises, David Goyer kind of went, I'm going to take a break. He went, started reading some Superman comics, went, I've got a great idea, called up Christopher Nolan, pitched this idea to him. Christopher Nolan went, oh, that's awesome. That's pretty cool. And then that's what led to Man of Steel getting made. It was not the origins of it was Christopher Nolan and David Goyer, the Dark Knight gang, had an idea that they really liked. And that's kind of how it came about. And the whole pitch was, what would happen if Superman suddenly appeared on the screen, on the scene? And everyone was introduced, wait, there's aliens and there's this superpowered man. How would the world respond? The whole pitch was, this is new. That's not a great setup for a shared universe if you're going to say that Wonder Woman's been around for forever.
And that's where you get into the studio interference and really trying to catch up with Marvel. We should have gotten, like, Man of Steel, totally fine. We should have gotten a solo Batman movie. We should have gotten a solo Wonder Woman film before we even thought about doing Justice League. And that's why BVS is kind of... BVS is... more of a Batman movie than it really is a Superman movie. Now, I think the Ultimate Edition really fixed some of those problems.
Yeah.
It shows Clark being a reporter, and it shows his side of the equation a little bit more. But when you have a movie called Batman versus Superman, you need to balance both of those halves equally, and I don't think it does that. And on top of that, it shoehorns in the Justice League just... grossly, which I don't think was Zack Snyder's initial intention.
See, the movie feels to me like... Goyer, Snyder, they were talking and they went like, all right, our sequel. All right, what's the backlash? So we have Superman. And then what about all the politics that come with that and who he chooses to save? That's interesting. Okay. And then we'll have Lex Luthor comes in as the face of that. Okay, that's really good. And then the reception was kind of mixed and they went, and then at the same time, Avengers is just killing it the year before. And they went, okay, we got to put Batman in it. Can you do Batman as the counter to Lex Luthor? He's the guy that can be redeemed in the story and understand where Superman's coming from. Can you take that idea that you had and put Batman in it?
Yeah.
And the Justice League. And that's what the movie feels like. Because it's you have a story that could work in and of itself with Lex Luthor and his plot and maybe even Doomsday. And then you have this whole other thing about Batman and his rage that we never saw normal Batman. We never got his movie. Like, you imagine, what if we got the Batman and we saw hopeful Bruce Wayne? Not hopeful, that's the wrong word for Bruce Wayne. But you get the kind of a classic Ben Affleck, older Batman. And the post-credits scene is 5 minutes long. And it's that intro sequence of Batman v Superman.
I completely agree.
And you just see the rage. And you just, the whole movie's about him kind of trying to balance who he is. And then the thing that snaps him happens in the post-credit scene. And we're seeing that some of this happened parallel to Man of Steel. And he's been working in the shadows and people don't know who he is. And then he sees that and he snaps. And then suddenly a bunch of people who are like, why is Batman, like, he's not the Punisher. Why is he doing this? Like, oh, we saw him not that. And he just watched in front of him thousands of his, like, just die right there. And there's nothing that he could do. As this guy that has dedicated his life to saving lives, that guy is a threat and I have to stop him. And there's an insanity to that. There's a pride to that. And that makes his story so much more richer inside of Batman v Superman. They didn't do that, though. And so they rushed to it and trying to do all these plots. And this also gets convoluted. So anyway, we talked a lot about this one. Suicide Squad just seems like they rushed it. I mean, all the stories of David Ayer had 6 weeks to write the script, and they didn't know what they wanted.
Yeah, they rushed that thing out. There was a lot of studio interference. Even going back to BVS, the theatrical release of BVS is just hacked to shreds. It is just the plot is actually incomprehensible because they hack out all of the important setup in the beginning, which is still baffling to me why a studio would do that. It was like, oh, this isn't important. Well, no, this is very important. And so they do the same thing with Suicide Squad. They hire a trailer company because everyone liked the trailers to come in and cut the
movie.
re-edit the movie. And so what we get feels like a trailer. It's all
music
style
as
with
character development.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's all style with no substance, which this might be getting a little ahead of myself, but this is why, that's why Birds of Prey is so interesting, because it has style. It's got, you know, very vibrant, sometimes abrasive style, but it all has a purpose, and it all works to, you know, creating the you know, feeling like you're inside the head of Harley Quinn. Whereas like Suicide Squad, it's like, oh, that was a really cool trailer, let's do that, but for an entire movie.
Yeah.
And so you just get nothing, and the villains suck, and it's just like Jared Leto's being just completely pretentious and over the top. It's just like, what are we doing here, guys? Come on. And so I think that movie mixed with the mixed to negative reception of BVS really just started to worry people, and then they just go full blown, we're gonna just take Warner Brothers DC is like, we're just gonna take complete control and just hack Justice League to shreds. Yeah. Because we don't want to continue with Snyder's vision, even though we really should continue with Snyder's vision, because we don't even know where we're going. It's just baffling. That's creative decisions.
So with the Snyder cut people, I mean, on the one hand, I would desperately love to see that. I mean, if they announce that, I would desperately love to see it. Other hand to it is that it doesn't exist. In this, here's what I mean by that. Like, if people are like, no, he said there's a cut. Gotcha. But, I mean, it was supposed to be two movies. They squished it down to one. And then, I mean, immediately, as soon as Batman v Superman didn't get the response they wanted, they got the wrong message. Oh, it's too dark. That's not really the problem.
That wasn't what it was.
And so then, like, let's put humor in there. And then that Comic-Con trailer they put out a year and a half before the movie came out was all jokes. And that was pure Snyder. That was pure. I mean, it looked Snyder and everything, but it was pure jokes and one-liners and Bruce Wayne joking with the Flash and Aquaman. Yeah. I mean, his vision had been compromised before they hit the record button. Yeah. That's what I hit record. They slapped the, it's, I'm using my language, not theirs, but whatever.
I agree.
I would desperately love to see it, but that vision of it, I just don't know that it exists. And it just kind of,
I think we will see it, similar to a story we're going to talk about a little bit later on. I think we're going to see it because I think first of all, you get all this stuff that Snyder's talking about. I think he's just going to finance the project himself, because he is the type of creator who will not be able to sleep at night unless his vision is put out there for the world to see. I mean, he made a movie like Sucker Punch and he still stands by it. Like, Sucker Punch is not a great movie, but it's all Zack Snyder. Mm-hmm. It's his vision. And I can't see him just like living with himself, knowing that his name is attached to this monstrosity that clearly was not his vision. And so
that he's not going out there bad mouthing it. He's not doing anything to trash Whedon. He's not doing anything to actually like cause trouble, but he's doing everything he can to be like, here's the thing I was excited about. Here's what I was working on. Here's a little bit more of what's out there. And he's been posting these pictures all along. I mean, and he keeps doing it. He keeps teasing them because, and then the fact that, you know, when you have Jason Momoa, like, oh, yeah, I saw something. He showed me. It's like, right.
Yeah.
He's got something that he wants to get out there. So I can't wait till the day that happens or whenever that
it'll happen.
I mean, when I say it doesn't exist, I'm not saying I don't want to see it. And I'm not saying that there's not a thing that we'll probably see. What I'm saying is that his actual vision is very different from what he was able to film. And I think that's why I think we'll be underwhelmed even when we do get it. I think it absolutely will be an improvement without question. But at the same time, I think it won't be like the full thing that we were hoping it would and could be, because it was compromised before they hit record. And to even just kind of a couple more thoughts on some of the things where I think they went wrong. If you're going to try and do a shared universe, Zack Snyder, I don't think was ever the right guy to do it.
No, absolutely not. That's why, and I don't mean to cut you off, just real quickly. That's why I think once we do get this Snyder cut, these three films, like Man of Steel, BVS Ultimate, and the Snyder cut Justice League, that will be a great Elseworld trilogy.
Yes.
You know, it's this Elseworld Snyder vision that I'm glad exists, that I'm glad happened. But, like, it will not be, like, used going forward.
No. And And the thing is, I love Zack Snyder as a filmmaker. And it's not necessarily that all his movies are great, but there's always such a distinct flavor, vision, whichever word you want to use. It's so distinctly Zack Snyder, except Justice League. A couple years back when I went back and rewatched Dawn of the Dead, I was like, this might be my favorite zombie movie. And then 300, a great dude movie. Visceral in the way it's doing things. And then, Watchmen, of taking this unfilmable thing and doing something with it that's faithful, but so distinctly Zack Snyder at the same time. I love Man of Steel also. It took me a little while to come around to it. I was always positive, but it took me a while to this is just, if you don't try and compare it to Richard Donner, man, this is like a Snyder version, Elseworld. This is a very cool thing. And I'm so excited to see this Netflix movie that he's doing with, got Chris Pratt and it's zombies and Dave Bautista. That just sounds amazing. That sounds just perfectly what he needs to go back to after what he just went through.
Yeah.
Justice League, of just seeing it kind of sucks you're watching a movie directed by committee.
Yeah.
Scene just feels different. Suddenly it's just so overtly Joss Whedon jokes out of the blue. Ben Affleck's weight is shifting by about 20 pounds.
It's weird. Yeah.
His skin tone looks different. He got a chemical peel right before the reshoots it's a very stuff like that. It's just odd. It's stuff where it doesn't even seem like Whedon tried to match the look. It's bizarre.
Even the music, man, Danny Elfman's score is so bad. Terrible. What were they thinking? I get compromising the production stuff, but the one thing you've been universally praising, like that people have universally praised across the board with these movies, you're gonna just up and get rid of?
Yeah, that's it's baffling. But so, kind of moving on to our next subject, DC movies having excessive behind the scenes tinkering and second guessing is not a new thing. This actually goes all the way back to the original comic book movie blockbuster, Superman the movie. It started there. I would go into a section now that we'll be doing from time to time on the podcast called Story Time, where we kind of talk about some behind the scenes stories of kind of how movies got made and go into some interesting stuff. So have you seen the Richard Donner Superman movies, all the different versions?
I saw the first one and the second one, the Richard Donner cut. I don't think I ever saw the original version of Superman 2, but granted, it has been years since I've watched either of those. I just am not inclined to gravitate towards them, I guess.
That's when I grew up, that's all there was. And so then for me, those were so formative, so important growing up with those. But so the backstory on that Superman 2, super fascinating, just incredibly interesting stuff. Because originally these father-son duo called the Salkinds bought the rights to Superman, and they just wanted to make money. They saw that as a way to make money. They weren't really passionate about the material. So they went let's do a big blockbuster about this American mythology, basically. And so who can we get in the mid 70s? Who's the best? We'll get Mario Puzo. This is right after Godfather 1 and 2. They're how do we get the best guy for this? Mario Puzo to kind of make this big script out of it. And then they bring in Tom, was it Mankiewicz? He did a bunch of Bond films to then touch the script up. And Puzo was way over the top. Tom kind of shapes it into something. They hire Richard Donner, Goonies, Lethal Weapon, to direct it. And they're in the middle of production, and they designed it to be two movies shot back to back. Superman 1, Superman 2. Capuzzo came up with this big, massive story, and they were going way over budget because no one had ever done flying like this before. So it's just crazy over budget. They paid millions of dollars for Marlon Brando to be in the movie for 5 minutes. And so they start trying to rush Richard Donner, and they were shooting 1 and 2 back to back. And they shot 80% of number 2, 80% of it. And there was excessive stress between Richard Donner and this middleman producer they brought in, to the point that they weren't even on speaking terms. And Richard Donner makes this movie, and eventually they're like, stop working on two, just finish this one because we're way over budget. They put the movie out, huge, massive hit, and makes bukus of money, but they didn't like working with Richard Donner because he was fighting back with them and he went over budget, and so they didn't bring him back. But they had a movie that was only 80% complete, and they didn't want to pay Richard Donner, and they didn't want to work with him. And so for the director they brought in to finish it to get directing credit, he has to shoot over 50% of the movie. That's the way the Directors Guild works. So he has to reshoot and retinker 30% of the movie that's already been shot so that he's done over 50% of the movie. So he comes in with a whole new intro to the movie, little insert scenes throughout the whole film. And it was a guy that doesn't really like Superman. And so he starts introducing all these weird powers for Superman, like he can rip the S off of his shirt and throw it at people, and it wraps around people, and he can multiply himself in the Fortress of Solitude, like weird stuff, and added like slapstick into it.
Yeah.
And so then the movie comes out and it's a hit. And then all these TV versions that they showed back in the 80s were like 30 minutes longer, and they added the Richard Donner footage into a bunch of these TV broadcasts of it. So the version I had growing up on VHS tape had multiple, like it had 20 minutes of Richard Donner footage. So I bought it on DVD 10 years later and I was like, wait, where's 20 minutes of the movie? Where'd that footage go? And I didn't know what I was seeing because there's pre-internet footage and internet information everywhere.
Yeah.
And then about 14 years ago, they finally let Richard Donner make a cut of the movie. And so Richard Donner actually gets to go back and finish his version of the film. And so then you get a version of it that came out in 2006, right around Superman Returns, yeah, that has 30, 40 minutes of new footage, a totally different beginning, cuts out the slapstick. And where it gets real interesting, the Salkinds, those producer father, son, they didn't want to pay Marlon Brando for two movies. So even though they shot footage of him for the second film, they cut all that footage out of the theatrical cut of the movie and just had I guess the lady that played Jor-El's wife is the person that's in the theatrical cut. But all those scenes were shot with Marlon Brando. Mm-hmm. And so then Richard Donner cut puts Marlon Brando back into it. And somewhat even like the Batman v Superman cut where things didn't make sense, there's a whole section about how Superman gets his powers back that's cut from the theatrical cut. It's not in there. So there's this whole thing. Superman trades his powers. He has to go back and beg for his powers. In the theatrical, he just shows up with a crystal and he like holds it up. And then suddenly he's in his costume 5 minutes later in Metropolis. But yeah, there's a scene that was cut that was all Marlon Brando with this whole thing about the fathers for the son. Like, it's all biblical allegory, Superman, Jesus Christ, Messiah sacrifice stuff. Interesting stuff. If you're a movie fan, you've got, I would highly recommend checking these two ones out because it's just so interesting to see two different directors tell the same exact story and seeing how different they are while being exactly the same. And the weird thing about the Richard Donner cut is that it copies the end of the first movie. So in the original script, the end that's on the movie that's theatrical where he turns back the earth, that was supposed to be the end of the second movie. And then when they cut it down, they said, just finish this one. They decided to take that finale and then put it on the first movie. And then when Richard Donner made his cut, he's like, that was our original vision, so I'll do that too. So he does the same end on both movies. It's like, okay, probably shouldn't have done that. Probably should have gone with the Lester ending on that one. So anyway, what's your take on all of that fun stuff that I just said?
I mean, I just love hearing about like behind the scenes, like drama like that, you know, like the Bond. I mean, the James Bond franchise is like my favorite film franchise. And like it had its fair share of drama on some of the Sean Connery films where like Connery was feuding with like, I think it was like Richard Maybaum or something like that. And like he wouldn't even be on set if like he was around, or maybe it wasn't Richard, maybe it was like Cubby. I think it was Cubby. Yeah, it was Cubby Broccoli. Like he would be on set, and like Sean Connery would just like refuse to work if he like he even saw him. And so I'm just like, it's funny like when you hear those like instances of just like complete just like hatred, for one another's.
Right.
And so yeah, it's funny. I love hearing that, but you know. The Richard Donner cut is is always what has given me hope and optimism for seeing the inevitable Snyder cut. Because it's like, and it's not even like the Donner cut is part of like a different studio. You know, like this is still WB. This
and
is
it's
still
on
Warner
the
Brothers.
It's in the set. I mean, they went all in on it. They fully endorsed it. They put together a documentary about the making of it. The documentary on the set walks you through all the tension. And Richard Donner's there.
Yeah.
The son of the Salkinds, the father died many years ago, but the son, both of them interviewed in it. I mean, they supported, like, fully, let's air our dirty laundry. Let's let it out there, because it's that's an interesting story itself. And we're going to let you see this. We're going to allow it to happen. They did that. Now, it took 25 years. But they let it happen, and that absolutely should give Snyder Cut people hope that once get some distance there, they let it happen.
Well, listen, like it's already starting to happen. You know, Zack Snyder, we live in an age where everything is like far easier. I mean, it's not like that. It's easy, but it's easy in a different way. You know, like back in the day when you like were dealing with like actual celluloid and like, you know, just like a lot of hard labor and something like visual effects were like ridiculously expensive. I mean, they're still ridiculously expensive now, but like at a different level. I mean, the digital age has just given, you know, filmmakers so many different opportunities to you know, to go in and do stuff. It's why you get like some 4K releases that have like, you know, stuff touched up a little bit, you know?
Right. So I don't know. I love that story and the behind the scenes stuff. It's just fascinating. That's also why I kind of want to start, even have this section story time when those are appropriate to share some stories, planets sharing some stories. Moving on to our next little category in here, something that will be a kind of a weekly little thing, calling it Deep Cuts, where we are talking about DC movies this week. So we want to make some recommendations for some deeper cuts in regards to DC TV shows or movies, animated films, diving into it. And every week we'll kind of give you some of our deep cut recommendations. When it comes to DC movies, DC TV shows, what would be kind of your deep cuts?
So it's hard for me to go deep with some of these deep cuts. I mean, like, I'll just throw out a few and then I'll like go in deeper with some, like, but I really like the Constantine show, you know, even though it was like, you know, the product of network television, I thought they nailed the character, and they managed to work around the confines of network TV and tell like interesting stories. I mean, obviously there was just like issues with like some of the writing and like creative differences and whatnot, but like, I really dug that. Same with Lucifer. I thought Lucifer was an excellent, you know, show based off a DC property that made its way onto Netflix and network television, and then, you know, was picked up by Netflix. Another instance of where they just like absolutely nailed the casting for the central character. In terms of animated stuff, Batman Beyond is my favorite incarnation of Batman. So growing up watching that, just absolutely loved that.
So I was the perfect age for Batman the animated series. Like, I was 11 when that debuted. So 11, I mean, imagine that's the quality of show that I got at 11 years old.
And then
I watch what my kids are watching now. It's like, this is not the same.
Oh, I know. The Batman shows they have out now, man, it's just, they're not good. But yeah, I mean, Batman the BTAZ is exceptional. And the thing I loved about BTAZ was just how it, like, They did the back door into Batman Beyond, you know, like it felt like Batman Beyond was the natural continuation of BTAZ. So it's just like, I love that. I love Return of the Joker too. You know, a couple DC animated films, Under the Red Hood is exceptional. I love that. And then obviously The Dark Knight Returns. But the one I do want to highlight, I will say, is Road to Perdition. Now, a lot of people don't realize that Road to Perdition is actually the Sam Mendes film with Tom Hanks, you know, and Paul Newman and Daniel Craig and Jude Law even, I think, is in there. It's like, first of all, amazing movie, just amazing emotional movie with prestige talent and world-class performances and direction and score. A lot of people don't realize that that's actually based off of a graphic novel of the same name published by DC Comics. And so, you know, just when you kind of like put that into perspective and you're like, oh, Sam Mendes the guy who won an Academy Award mm-hmm. for American Beauty went and adapted like a graphic novel. This made this big swing, you know, with Paul Newman and yeah. and like Tom Hanks and all these guys, and he made like a mobster film in Chicago set during like the 20s. Like this, it's crazy, you know? And so I've just always loved it for that, on top of it just being an excellent movie. And so I think when you go back and rewatch it through a different lens, like realizing that, oh, this was a graphic novel, it's just a fun thing to do.
Right. So, and for the one I'll go with, well, actually, I'll pause there for a little bit. We talked about this a little bit on last week's episode that we recorded, that if you're watching this or listening to this on any podcast sites, the Get to Know You episode, we talked about Road to Perdition, American Beauty a little bit. But that's where I was excited mm-hmm. for it to come out, because American Beauty was one of those movies for me that was like life-changing. Wow. And yeah. Tom Hanks as a gangster, sassing guy, shooting yeah. people in the face. Fun times. So the one I'll go with is something I grew up watching, would be the Flash TV series, but the pilot movie. Now, if you think that Superman the movie, Batman 89 are kind of too cheesy, too dated, the show will much more dated because it was a TV show at the same time. But if you can put up with the cheese and datedness of those, I'd check out the Flash, the pilot TV movie they put out for it. And I was like 9 when that came out, and actually took my mom's copy of Flashdance that she had on a VHS tape and recorded over it with the Flash. And then she came home and discovered that I'd done that. Like, Dad told me I could record over it. She's like, yeah, but I wanted my movie. It's like, well, it's like Flashdance. It's the Flash. but if Danny Elfman wrote the score for it, and then Shirley Walker, who did Batman the Animated Series, I composed the score for it. So it's like an yep. actual score. And yep. if you listen to it, it's very like clearly from the same team that did Batman 89, while being its own thing. But I mean, it's just so robust, vibrant. This is what like Justice League, what you wanted Danny Elfman to do. And then it, you know, it doesn't have any of that life to it. I actually really like the look of the costume. At certain angles, you can see the padding when he does certain things, but in general, the pilot movie, I think, is actually pretty good. It gets way cheesier as you go into the episodes and they could keep everything up, but that's yeah. the one that I would recommend. Final little section on here. What should people watch this weekend? I think the obvious answer, go check out Birds of Prey.
Go see Birds of Prey.
Even if you're yeah. skeptical, if you're a DC fan, if you're a movie lover, that's the thing to go see. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm just saying that I would always make that recommendation, because even yeah. if it's awful, then it's going to be an interesting awful. But you can actually give us your 30-second pitch once again. Why is this the one we should go see?
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, everyone should go see it just because it's fun. I mean, it is just like a fun time at the movies. Great characters. I'll say it. It's probably the best villain in a DCEU film to date. Maybe competing against Zod.
Better than the Enchantress?
Listen, I know. It's tough. It's tough. But no, I just think Ewan McGregor as Black Mask is just a scene stealer. He's incredible. It's got a lot of really cool action. If you're a fan of the John Wick films, Chaz Stahelski did some reshoots for this film. Yeah, and so you can see the Wickian influence in there. It's a lot of really practical action too, which I love. Some great set pieces.
In the trailers, there's definitely a couple of those shots where you're like, that's a cool action shot. In yeah. different regards, whether kind of the flippy stuff or just little things like hitting, is she hitting a bag of cocaine at someone's head?
Yeah, is that yeah. a thing well, that's is one that of what the, happens. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're like shooting a mound of cocaine, and she sniffs it. She gets like a buzz, and then she starts like killing people. It's great. It's just fun. And so yeah, I mean, a lot of violence. Not like in the way that Deadpool does it. Just a lot of just like you know, realistic the way they do violence kind of reminded me of Tarantino. But
well, you've sold me. I'm gonna take my yeah. 5-year-old daughter to go see this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, do not take your kids. This is not a kid movie. I'm like 90% sure there's a C-bomb dropped somewhere in this
nice.
film. So but no, I mean, just yeah, if you're looking for a fun time at the movies, a crime comedy with great characters that all get fleshed out, go see Birds of Prey. It's got a lot of style too that I absolutely loved. So the other one that I wanted to bring up, I don't know if you've seen, Sean, but The Lodge. The Lodge
no,
gets a limited I believe The Lodge is getting a New York and LA release this week. It was like this Sundance, I think it was a Sundance film, Sundance sensation last year. Excellent horror movie that I'm actually seeing tonight. I have not seen it, but I've only heard like amazing things. So like if you are in LA or New York or wherever The Lodge is showing, maybe consider checking that out if you've already seen Birds of Prey or if you don't want to see Birds of Prey.
Very cool. There you have it. That was our debut episode of the podcast. Griffin, thank you so much for joining. Where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can always check out the Film Speak channel for more movie reviews. We got an award season show called The Front Runners. We're gearing up for the Oscars this Sunday, so we're going to be having a lot of fun for that. You can also just follow me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
Next week, we'll be back and we'll be talking, of course, about the Oscars. As I mentioned before, if you're on the actual podcast feed, wherever these are distributed, and check the audio versions out, there should be a couple more episodes in there. We're still figuring this all out, so we're going to try a bunch of different segments and listen to your feedback, see what you guys really like, see what doesn't work so well, make some adjustments. Thank you so much for listening and watching if you're watching over on YouTube, and keep talking movies and TV too much.